It is Saturday morning, March 3rd, 2012. It's about 10 o'clock, and we are here at CSUN finishing up the conference. And this is the Blind Access Journal, and I'm Daryl.
And I'm Allison.
And with us, we have Nancy Miracle, the creator of Digit Eyes. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing wonderful.
Absolutely.
So we are excited to have you with us on the show, and it's been wonderful to spend some time with you here at the conference. Nancy, if you would give us a brief overview of what the Digit Eyes app is and what it does and how it works.
Digitize is a small application for the iPhone that deals with a small but very irritating problem. The problem being, what is this? And our approach to dealing with it through Digitize is through creation, reading, and understanding labels. And there are several different kinds of labels that Digitize can understand. To our surprise, most people were very interested in understanding manufacturers' codes, UPC codes, EAN codes.
Now these are barcodes, right?
Barcodes.
Yeah, barcodes.
Barcodes. The little things that appear on the bottom of packages and the back of packages where sighted people won't see them, but where the grocery scanners will. Our initial vision of the software was we really believed that people were going to want to make their own labels. Braille labels, audio labels have always been popular, and we were thinking about having a product that would work in that space very seamlessly on the iPhone, allowing people to affix labels to things, scan them, record their voice about whatever it was, go back to the same item, play it back. An example being, you know, that when you buy something, it may have a barcode on it, but when it's in your house and you've unwrapped it, if it's a shirt or something like that, the code's gone. So you want your own label. We were very surprised to find out that probably most of the people are a little interested in that. Some of them are a lot interested. But most of the people are really interested in understanding those manufacturer's codes that appear on the products. And that's really turned out to be one of our areas of focus with the product.
So it's an app that you can buy on the iTunes App Store. It's $30, right? And what you get with that is the ability to read these barcodes and understand what is in the box or in the can and so on and so forth. And you can also create labels, right? And use
Correct.
It that way too.
Yeah, you can create two kinds of labels. You can create text labels, which actually are a barcode that has text encoded in them. And we actually have a free application for that. It's called Digitize Lite, which we created mostly on the demand of spouses and significant others who were saying, what is that label? We also have one which is a voice recording, as I noted, where you can put it on a thing, record your voice. Although we really didn't plan to get into the business of selling supplies, we did end up in the business of selling supplies because we have a washable version of those, which can be washed, it can be dried, it can be bleached, it can be dry cleaned, and it's designed to be sewn into clothing. Okay, it's just one of our regular type labels, except that it's on a special material. And it will pretty much last the life of the garment, and you can re-record on it, so you can put it in your shirt and record to yourself, this is my gray and green shirt. It goes with my gray pants. It doesn't really go with my khaki pants. And then when you get it out of the washer where it's hanging in the closet, you can play that back to yourself when you're getting dressed.
Isn't that neat?
It is. If I sewed.
Well, you can put them on with stitch witchery, but we really don't recommend it. We talked to the Garment Council to find out how long a garment is expected to last. And their answer was 50 washings.
Okay.
And washing is a very hostile environment, and it turns out the stitch witchery holds up for about 20 washings. So it won't generally hold up for the life of your garment. If you've ever used it in something for a ham, you'll know that. What we have found is that most dry cleaners will sew them in for about 25 cents.
Oh, okay.
So, and what you want to do is you want to put them on shirt tails, you want to put them where your pants or your skirt have a label, wherever your garment labels are sort of out of the way. But they hold up great. we do recommend, if you can, put them through the dryer as well as the washer, because the heat in the dryer tends to flatten them out and make them be very readable.
Ah.
When we first brought this out, I had a wonderful experience where one of our users in Australia bought a whole bunch of it, and he was chatting with me about 2 weeks later, and he says in his Australian fashion, these labels suck. And I said, oh, excuse me, what do you mean? He goes, well, I got your labels, and the wife put them in all of our clothing, and then she recorded everything for me, and now I've got to do the laundry. I said, oh, well, you know, into each life some rain must fall.
There you go. So tell me, how does your digitized app differ from some of the other iOS apps that recognize barcodes and allow you to label things? Because I've seen other ones, and I want to know what sets yours apart.
A couple of things, one of which is we took a very different approach to scanning labels. Most of the products that scan barcodes are really designed for people who are sighted, and they expect you to line the code up. Red Laser, for instance, expects you to put it into a box, which is not an easy thing to do, even for sighted people. Many of the other ones expect you to basically take a picture of the code. Our approach has been a little different, where what we do is we use the video stream and we analyze each frame of the video stream to find barcode suspects. So what we're able to do is we're able to give you audio feedback while you're scanning that goes tick, tick, tick. When you find a thing, we actually speed the ticking up so it goes tick, tick. But our retrieval is very fast, so you generally don't hear that because it says beep, letting you know it's got one, sends a transaction off to our host computer, the host computer looks it up, sends it back to you, and voices it to you. There's a number of other apps. LookTel has a new one, for instance, where they store the data on your phone. The IDMate works that way, where the database for the product is actually stored on the device. We took a little different approach because we really felt that the database was likely to grow very quickly. There's an amazing number of manufacturers' codes in the world, and they're added to all the time. And so what we did was we kept our data on the host, and you just send a transaction, retrieve the information, and get it back. What that means is that we can have a lot more codes, and we probably have one of the world's largest databases of UPC codes. We currently have roughly 25 million codes. As of this morning, I checked, it was 24,670,000.
Wow.
Okay, I would bet that Amazon probably has more codes. eBay might. But I would guess that we're right up there with the top three. And what that means is that means access to you in the sense that you're more likely to scan something and get an intelligible answer. And I think that's markedly different from most of the other products.
That sounds exciting.
So Nancy, you know, Digitize has been out for almost 2 years now, I think, and I met you at ACB convention back in 2010, and tell the story of, you know, I mean, I came up to you and I said, oh, Nancy, nice to meet you, but, you know, Digitize doesn't work. I spent $30 on it and I'm really struggling with it. I have not been able to get one barcode to work. And you proceeded to teach me pretty much everything I know now about how to use my iPhone's camera.
Yeah, we are in a sort of a unique space in that we're a visible light scanner as opposed to some of the other products that are laser scanners. Okay, we actually do have an interface to a laser scanner if you have one. If you want to use your tethered laser scanner, you can come to our website. You can pick the option called Use Laser Scanner, and you can scan that way. That's not really consistent with the philosophy about what we think people need to do with scanners. We think that you don't want to have to bring the mountain to Muhammad. You don't want to take the stuff to the scanner. It's not convenient, right? The scanner's in the office someplace or in the kitchen. We think you really want to scan where the product is. But the nature of the phone, of course, is that it doesn't have a laser in it. Okay, and lasers have the advantage of having a wide field.
Yeah.
And what this really does is this gets the image as the camera has captured it. So yeah, it's a different proposition, really.
But I'm sitting here waving my phone around this box. She's like, oh, here's a box. And she's like, what are you doing? And so I showed you, right? And you're like, oh, no, no. That's not how we do this.
Right. Now, some of this varies, of course, a little bit with the phone you have. And Apple has really improved their phones over time. Between the 3GS, the 4, and now the 4S, the cameras have increasingly gotten better. The 4S, for instance, has an 8-megapixel camera, which means it has a really big picture on it, which is really good for us.
Right.
Your best bet, truthfully, in scanning is to hold the phone stable.
Yes.
Even brace it on a table or something. I mean, I have a tremor in my hands occasionally, so for me it's easiest just to hold it flat and then to move the object in front of it. And one of the things that our package does is it ticks while it's scanning. And it's useful to actually use the tick to turn something, because the ticks are timed in just about the amount of video footage that gives us a good idea about whether or not there's a barcode in it. And there's always a question about finding the barcode.
Yes.
Right? We know the barcode is usually opposite the opening side on a package, if it's a package that's square. It's away from the presentation face, if you can figure out which one that is. So if it's a fancy box of candy, it's going to be on the side that doesn't have the fancy, neat top.
Gotcha.
But there's also things like Coca-Cola cans, water bottles, which have continuous labels. And your best bet on that is to hold it in front of the camera. When it goes click, turn it a quarter turn. When it goes click, do another quarter turn. When it goes click, do a quarter turn again. And your chances are, by the time you've done the fourth quarter turn, that you'll have a capture.
But you've told me, right, to use slow movements. Is that mm-hmm. still correct? Like, you told me about how to, I put the object on the table, and then how to float, kind of just move the phone up slowly, mm-hmm. like it's floating upward.
Is that
still correct?
That is still correct. That'll work very well.
Yeah.
One of the things that has changed, however, is that Apple has given us more control over the autofocus.
Okay.
So one of the things that we can now do is we can cycle the autofocus, which is what you were doing when you were moving your hands.
Right. Because you were saying, like, side to side is really a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still true?
It is. Uh-huh. You're best off to actually hold it close and just sort of float it up and move it away if it's an item that's static on a table.
Right.
And you don't want to, like, brace it on the table.
Okay.
The issue is that you want to get as much of the object you're scanning in the camera's field of vision. And the advantage of doing it flat on a table, of course, is that you know that your hand's going vertically up over
it,
which is the reason where you want to go ahead and try that as an approach. The new cameras are much better about getting an entire object in the field of focus.
See, I really want a 4S now.
And it's not just that you love Siri, huh?
The Siri's cool, but I think the camera for me is a big thing too.
Do you have any updates planned for Digitize?
We do. We don't pre-announce things,
right?
So I'm not going to tell you exactly what we're doing, but I would point out to you that if you go to our website, because we often prototype things on the website, and you do try the option for the laser scanner, you're going to find that you have nutrition information, you have ingredients, and you have directions on there. So
now this is your laser scanner. This is
your website again.
www.digit-eyes.com.
Now this is your laser scanner. When we're talking about laser scanners, we're talking about the scanners you get from AT Guys or somewhere like that that you plug into your computer with a USB port, right?
Right. There's also an input box there, so you could actually type the number.
Right.
Should you be so inclined. There's also a fun little feature called Show Random Item.
Oh.
Okay, and that just lets you actually travel through the database and get a feel for what kind of information there is.
That's kind of neat.
Given that there's 25 million items, it is really random.
Yeah.
And there can be very unusual items in there. Not too long ago, I ran across the fact that we have freeze-dried musk ox meat.
Oh, wow.
From a site in Greenland.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, at least now if I come across it, I'll know what it is.
Well, the thing that's actually most interesting, and this like tells you a lot about barcodes, is I actually went and looked at the site because I thought it was curious. It's arcticfoods.gl if you're interested. And it turns out there are several kinds of freeze-dried muscle meat. There is machine-dried and natural-dried.
Wow.
And so clearly, if you're somebody who has a cuisine that includes muskox meat, you're going to be something of a connoisseur of how it was freeze-dried.
Uh-huh. And it's important because now we can tell them apart. We'll know which one's which now.
Indeed.
So we don't accidentally get the naturally dried when we want the machine stuff.
Right, or vice versa. But it does not, you know, I mean, we do review what our spiders are finding, and it just amazes me how many things manufacturers introduce, what kind of things they have. It's almost beyond belief how many things have UPC codes on them.
Thank you again.
So, we saw the iOS 4 app come out summer-ish 2010, and then we didn't, you know, things moved along, and we didn't hear from you. The blind community didn't hear from you for a while, and now you're back. So, I guess many people are asking, you know, sort of what's up with that, and how are things going to be moving forward?
Well, the truth is, we got engaged in a number of what I would call unsuccessful research projects, where we're very disciplined. We're an engineering company. And we don't release things that kind of work. We have a philosophy that we won't release something until we can guarantee that it's going to work in 99.99, probably 99% of the cases. And frankly, we were very interested in a number of problems. Color detection. We were interested in money detection. And we were exploring some of those options, but we weren't able, at least yet, to come up with a solution that had an acceptable degree of reliability. And for instance, you really don't want to be wrong about somebody's money.
No.
Okay, and you don't want to be wrong about the color of an object either.
No.
And send somebody out to work wearing a pink shirt and a pair of purple pants because the color in their closet was sort of a warm closet and it actually read to you as beige and brown.
Oh, I hear Daryl looks good in pink and purple.
So we spent a considerable amount of time investigating those, and unfortunately that is the nature of research. If it was, you know, knowing, it would be called knowing, not researching. Right, and we just haven't been able to solve those problems, and so we've gone back and continued working on the issue of labeling, which I still think is a very useful and viable technology, as opposed to recognizing.
Well, speaking of color detection, I was, despite its, you know, apparent limitations, I was really impressed with the color detector I saw back in 2012. And I think, you know, Allison, you said you saw it too, right?
Right. It was able to actually identify the color of my bracelet, which is unusual. A lot of color detectors can't handle jewelry.
It worked extremely well, and it still does, by the way, in white light.
Oh.
What happened was, when we got that into our engineering test, one of the things that we did was get a light box. Okay, and in a light box you end up exposing things to light at known frequencies and different colors. Okay, so you look at the same thing under purple light, orange light, green light, red light, yellow light, white light, blue light, etc. And that was the point where we started trying to explore strategies, because you need to know what color it is in absolute terms, not in relative terms. It's not okay to take a picture of something under green light when somebody's going to be wearing it under a variety of lighting conditions, sunlight, whatever. And the light in people's closets, we did quite a bit of sampling about internal house lighting, is quite different, particularly with the wide variety of fluorescents that are now on the market, because the federal government is trying to get people to substitute these efficient fluorescents. Some of them are very pink, some of them are very blue, and some of them are yellow, and some of them are white. And getting a consistent reading okay, means that you have to know what color the light is because the light will distort it. And when we started working with our samples in our color box, although you guys saw it demonstrated under white lighting in a convention hall, which is it is extremely dependable in those kind of conditions, it doesn't necessarily work as well in a yellow incandescent household light, a pink sort of sodium light, a blue fluorescent light. And we felt that the results were not of sufficient accuracy for us to be able to distribute it with honor, if you will. You know?
Right.
We don't want to send out something that's wrong. We would rather not send something out at all.
Well, we definitely appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So it's still an interesting problem. We're still working on it. But as, you know, a research topic at this point, it's certainly not a releasable product, although, as I say, it performs gorgeously under white light.
It was definitely a fascinating project. Didn't you have us though putting the camera right up to the object?
Mm-hmm.
So even when you do that, the lighting makes a difference.
It does, and we'd actually worked also with the flash, trying to get a dependable color reading from the phone itself. And it turns out the phone has an issue with reflections.
Oh.
And it has a tendency to mistake its flash for a solid white object. So there's just some physical problems inherent in that. We decided, frankly, that using washable labels was a better solution. And there were really two reasons. One was the accuracy of color recognition, and the thing that people are normally using color recognition for is for garments. Because nobody wants to look like a fool going out with that pink shirt and those purple pants. Right, Daryl? I'm just picking on Daryl. He's not wearing a pink shirt.
No.
But we decided that there were also going to be a number of interesting problems involving plaids, stripes, polka dots. What color do we report that? Do we report an average? Do we report a min-max in terms of difference? You know, this shirt varies between gray, blue, and white. How do we report that kind of thing?
Good point, yeah.
And we decided in the real world, between the issues with the light, the inherent problem with color detection, which is that many things are multiple colors, that labeling was a better solution.
Yeah.
And that it was going to be an inherently superior solution to develop a product where people could label their clothing, where it would stand up to being washed, dried, bleached, dry cleaned, etc., and they could say, hey, this is my gray and green shirt, and this is its characteristics. It can be washed, it should be dried on low temperature, or whatever it is that you want to know about that garment. And we decided that was a better solution to the problem of knowing what color your clothing was than using the color detector. But it also took us almost a year to investigate that and reach that conclusion.
Right, that makes sense.
But, you know, I mean, that's the nature of engineering. You don't know what the answer is when you start.
That's true. So you have the new laser, you know, over in digit-eyes.com, you have the new laser scanner option. Is there anything else going on that you, you know, are able to talk about this time?
Well, one of the things that we have been asked to look at, which I'll certainly tell you that it's an area of interest to us, and we're certainly examining it, not that we're guaranteeing we'll release a product about it.
Right.
We have had people who've asked us to look at Bluetooth scanners as adjuncts for the iPhone. We've also had people who asked us to look at devices such as laser sleds or things that fit with the dock connectors. Those are obviously interesting devices. The downside of those is those are going to either add cost to your phone, typically a couple hundred bucks if you're going to go ahead and get something that docks, or it's going to add, from our point of view, inconvenience, as if it were a separate laser scanner, like a Bluetooth scanner. I don't know how many people really are going to be willing to put up with the inconvenience of having two devices. And so we really remain, while we're interested in those and we're certainly investigating them and probably going to do something about them, I don't guarantee, we remain committed to the idea of visible light scanning. And I think as Apple improves their cameras, and truthfully as they improve their operating systems as well, we have seen that that has worked better and better. iOS 5 particularly has been a huge improvement. Even people who had like the 3GS and the four cameras dropped us notes and said, what did you guys do? Oh my goodness, it's so much faster. And the answer is, we didn't do anything. Apple did something. Okay, they improved how their camera handling worked. They made it easier, for instance, for us to cycle through focusing, which means that the capture is faster for the people who are using it.
Right, and that's what you want, right? Is, you know, that's the key issue, especially with camera-based barcode scanning, is how long does it take to actually get the code?
It does. I saw a lovely demonstration here at CSUN. Amy Mason from NFB was talking about the iPhone, and total surprise to me, she showed up with three objects and proceeded to scan them in front of a crowd of about 200 people, and I'm going, oh my goodness, I sure hope her internet connection holds up, because there were a lot of people on their phones using those connections. And she had some very difficult objects to scan. She had a round water bottle with a seamless label. She had some bottle of Tylenol or ibuprofen or something, which is a round object, right? And she proceeded to scan them all, just boom, boom, boom. And I was, yep, that's how it should work. You must have a 4S.
With digitized, right?
With digitized.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, it was a real pleasure to see that work, and I was delighted to see that the CSUN internet connections held up for it, because we had an awful lot of people here with iPhones. That's really one of the things that has changed a lot since we first started doing the product. Daryl, you'll recall when we first were talking, it was unusual to have an iPhone.
Yeah.
They had just been made accessible. They were really quite expensive. They were only available on AT&T, and people were saying, well, you know, until it gets on Verizon, until it gets on Sprint, I can't do this. Today, 2 years later, of course, it's on many of the services. The phone has been hugely improved in terms of accessibility and accessibility options, and I really think Apple's done a terrific job in terms of improving the operating system and making it be usable for us as developers as well.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. So Nancy, how can our listeners, you know, get in touch with you or stay in touch with you, and find out about what's next?
Well, anytime people want to get in touch with us, the way to do it, you can either telephone us. Our number's on our website. You can send mail to support@digit-eyes.com.
And that's digit-eyes.com. Right.
And we answer that very promptly. We're delighted to hear from people. Frankly, we're happy to hear from people who have problems, because problems always tell us what we can do to improve our engineering. And we are an engineering company, and we're devoted to using an engineering process to address problems. So as you have questions, problems, issues, or just want to say hello, we're more than delighted to hear from you. And please do contact us.
You're on Twitter also, right?
We're
@digit_eyes.
That's correct. We are.
Okay. Nancy, thank you for spending some time with us this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a beautiful venue. It's been a great conference. I'm certainly looking forward to probably seeing people here at NFB in the summer conferences. But I can't think that they're going to be as lovely as sitting here on the waterfront in San Diego. I think it's going to be a little warmer.
Well, thank you again. We really enjoy talking with you.
My pleasure.